World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's May.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California, and this is broadcast number 522, December the 6th, 1981. In two more nights, it will be the anniversary of the murder of John Lennon, and at first I was going to spend 1 hour talking about who killed John Lennon on this particular broadcast. But as I accumulated the material that I've set aside over the past year and added it to the other research on the assassination teams that have been doing this kind of work successfully for a long, long time, and particularly going right back to John Kennedy's assassination, it may be that I will do a four-part series on who killed John Lennon, starting this evening, and then December the 13th and the 20th and the 27th, right up to the new year. And if you listen very carefully, and you can send for the printed sheets that accompany this tapes if you don't tape it off the air, if you listen very carefully and get the names and places, you will see the pattern, what I call the recipe, the umbrella for the political assassinations. And into this interlocking team, I will place Mark David Chapman and the moving of John Lennon up to the time that he was killed at the Dakota in New York City and how he was trapped and killed at that time. I will put aside some of the important stories in the news that pertain to this, but I don't want to spend time on them now. One is Ronald Reagan's unleashing the CIA in the United States, turning it loose on us, just as it was happening up to the time of the Watergate exposures. I don't even want to spend time talking about that invasion of Gaddafi's people into the United States to kill the president. I believe that being as the CIA trained Gaddafi's assassination teams, we taught them how to blow up the airplanes and to do the terrorism so successfully they could do a job identical to the same one they did in Egypt, where they left Ghazal and Mubarak on either side of Sadat dead, and they killed Sadat with the 28 bullets right to the heart. It would be easy to blow up the President of the United States and keep Alexander Haig and George Bush surviving. After all, Reagan didn't cooperate in March and dropped dead when Hinckley shot at him. John Hinckley hasn't even been tried, if that wasn't a clear-cut case. And we've spent $400,000 so far just letting him linger. And we're going to change the U.S. attorney there, Howard Ruff, and manipulate the courts and have a dummy trial, as we've had in all these assassination trials or assassination attempts. I don't give a bit of credence to this ridiculous thing that Gaddafi himself would tackle the United States. We take such big countries and have so much bravado to go after them. And if anybody comes here who says he comes from Gaddafi, he was trained by the Central Intelligence Agency. And the vice president of the United States was director of the CIA. I want to talk some more later on the Patty Hearst book that's coming out. I wrote that story, book length, The SLA is the CIA. Patty tells in this new book how she drove the getaway car and Emily Harris killed a woman at the Carmichael Bank. The government's known, the FBI has known for years, but they will not prosecute Emily Harris, who killed this woman, because the SLA is the CIA. Emily Harris came from the Indiana State Police and narcotic agencies and worked with the Defense Intelligence, and they set up this little gang in 1972 to 74. So Patty can say that she drove a getaway car and Emily killed the woman. So what? Lives are cheap, and so much for that. I will add in a few weeks the material I have on William Holden, the murder of William Holden, and the death of Natalie Wood, the relationship or interrelationship of the two. The one I know was a top-level spy, William Holden. And there's a lot of more material coming in on Natalie Wood, and there was this close link of their associates and so forth. And then I will talk about the new super spy agency, larger than Interpol, bigger than Intertel, that's opening offices, international offices, right next door to the CIA. Now, the CIA has a few government restrictions that the international private organizations don't have to obey. Therefore, they can have their office next door. And the man who's heading this new super agency comes directly out of the offices of John J. McCloy in New York. John J. McCloy was the person who unleashed the major Nazi war criminals after World War II to start arming their Gestapo techniques all over the world. He was on the Warren Commission. He has been much of the setting up the OPEC, the Seven Sisters, so that we got strangled by the oil profits and the oil intrigues. John J. McCloy praised the people that were locked up in the Japanese internment camps. He had a role in that. He thought that was great during the last war. Out of that office comes the new director for a new spy agency. So there's a lot going on in the news, but I do want to talk about John Lennon, because the murder of John Lennon is part of a much larger fabric that has affected all of us for years, and he was just one more victim. Along with Richard Allen, and I'm going to go into the relationships of Richard Allen to Mark David Chapman and the Lennon murder. Along with him is the three-part, that horrible Mr. Casey of the CIA. William Casey and Richard Allen have had such a part with William Colby and Richard Helms, former directors of the CIA, and also George Bush, of continuing the murders and continuing the cover-ups. The Senate can't fire them. As I said before, they're in there sort of doing a dance to the end. Each one has so much on the other. This last week, there was an investigation of William Casey, and one article of the Washington Post is titled, "The CIA Chief is Not Unfit to Serve. No Raving Records." Another story says, "Senate panel says CIA chief failed to disclose investments and his liabilities." The certain countries that he controls, like Indonesia or Korea, they're called his clients. They're actually his countries. Another one, Casey's record raises concern on the panel. And another top front page story, Senate probers give CIA chief poor ratings. Now, when you're giving an institution $22 billion and every secret that they can possibly have, and they can open our mail and tap our phones and break up organizations, they're outright admitting that they've got a crook on their hands. They don't know how to unload him, but they don't even have a decent adjective to describe him. And Richard Allen and William Casey are really bad trouble. There were two cartoons this week about Richard Allen that sort of describe the story. One is the White House, and there's a large tree enveloping it, and it's very much like the old Watergate cartoons that came along. And it says the Allen scandal in this huge encasement of like oak trees or large trees is swallowing the whole White House. And Nancy is speaking, and there's a little message coming out of the window, and she says, "But Ronnie, it started out as just a little Japanese bonsai." And I do believe the Japanese bonsai could be the Regan Gate. Any one of these characters, they're so rotten, could be the Regan Gate if we follow it and keep following it, just as was done with Watergate. Another cartoon, a coffin, the Allen case, and a man very pleased standing up at the microphone saying, "You can go home now. The services are over. We've finished the investigation." And then it has a team of about eight people upside down and fighting each other, digging the grave out and looking for more and not settling that the case has been rested. And that's the Richard Allen probe. It's apropos of researching Richard Allen and the John Lennon case and updating that story that Nancy Reagan came out with one of her priceless remarks this week. Nancy's theory on drug abuse, in case any of you haven't read it, Washington Post, big story, music blamed for drug abuse. Nancy Reagan on Friday cited contemporary music and humor as the way that youth get their message that the illegal use of drugs is socially acceptable. And she, again, is harping like they did for 8 years when they were out here in California, the rock musicians, and what are we going to do with our children? Now, Nancy's become a great expert on drugs, you understand. She had Frank Sinatra at the inaugural ball putting up the entertainment with all of his links to Carlos Marcello and Sam Giancana and a mile long of crime figures. And now at Caesar's World that is involved with crime and scandal, and they can't even get a license. They're being kicked out of New Jersey if they don't get rid of their head for the Caesar's World. I mentioned that last week. Nancy has traveled around. She's spending New Year's Eve at the Annenbergs down in Palm Springs. Now, rock music causes drug abuse, you understand. Nothing like the Annenbergs and the mob figures that have been touted around Washington since the day John Kennedy was killed. Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon and Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan are nothing but drug kings or mafia kings. And she has the nerve to blame rock music. They were put in by the medical lobbies, by the AMA, the Quaaludes, the all the Tylenols, you name it, all the medical pharmaceutical concerns, the Pepsi-Cola people, the Coca-Cola people, and all of their gang and their appointments, all of Ronald Reagan's appointments, have been mob characters. Some he got away with and some he didn't. I'd like to do one night on just the mob-connected people to Ronald Reagan at this moment, now that he's president, not before. They can't clean up their act. But that Nancy Reagan has such nerve, such unmitigated nerve. If a woman had balls, I'd say she had them. I mean, to absolutely blame rock music for drug abuse and for the children getting upset about rock music. But that's their scapegoat, because their real fear is that the message, she uses the word the message, the young people not only get the message of drugs in music, they get political messages and they get messages of truth, similar to Mad Magazine. She complains that their humor is also bad for them. She's right that it's bad. And also, while she's complaining about rock music and the kids, there was a picture of Nancy in a publication this week. America's First Lady may get a collection of jewels fit for a queen. A jewel or a multi-million dollar collection was made up mostly of diamonds, rubies, sapphires, pearls, and gold that she could wear on state occasions, donated by a diamond dealer. You can better believe that that diamond dealer touches bases with some dope dealers. What do you want to bet that the stones that she wears or borrowed to go to Prince Charles' wedding weren't some way related to all the dope dealing people they know? This article says her collection would be donated by jewel dealers and corporations and wealthy friends of the Reagans. Their taxes would be tax deductible, so the taxpayer eventually would do it. It wouldn't go into the general till of the taxes. They'd get the deduction, and she could wear these lovely jewels as a picture of, again, with a crown, and she would have a $1 million set of a diamond ruby necklace, brooch, ring, and choker. I don't know if they mean to wear a choker or whether the diamonds will choke her, but it's so disgusting. The news is so disgusting. And now getting to Richard Allen and John Lennon, who murdered John Lennon. There was an article in the paper this morning, the many changes since John Lennon was murdered. And there were two interesting things in the San Francisco Examiner Chronicle. One was the policeman who was on the spot the moment that John Lennon was murdered. And he had an interview, and he said, the defense tried to make out that Mark David Chapman was crazy, a schizoid, out of touch with reality. He said, a wacko? Not in my book, and I've dealt with plenty of them. He wasn't talking to the walls. He wasn't hearing voices. When we got to the police station, he called his wife. He told her to get a doctor for his mother, and he told her to call the cops for her protection and not to call in the press. I couldn't believe that that guy was so rational. And the other thing that was interesting about the article today was that books are being planned about John and Yoko, but the important one is going to be put out by Rolling Stone magazine, edited by Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. And I'll have more to say in the next few weeks on the Jackie Onassis-Yoko Ono connection, because I really have never trusted it. I don't like it, and they're evidently going to put out a book. Jackie is going to edit the book on John and Yoko. And you know what I think. If you haven't known me a long time, you can guess what I'm thinking. And if you've listened to me for years, you know pretty well what I think about that connection. Now, last week I was talking about Richard Allen, how he met Ronald Reagan at Blair House on the 19th, the day before the inauguration, that the people that came over from Japan, the entourage, met Ronald Reagan at the Blair House on the 19th. The inauguration was on the 20th. They took some pictures of Nancy Reagan on the 21st and flew home. And knowing the kind of greasy fingers Reagan has, or Richard Nixon, and the kind of wheeling-dealing they could do, something went on at Blair House that had more to do with than the picture-taking. Some kind of an operation was going. I'm sure that the day after the inauguration, or the day before the inauguration, the president of General Motors or Ford or Chrysler or American car companies were not there. Representatives of Toyota and Datsun were there, and they were meeting with Ronald Reagan on the 19th. But the story gets worse than that, and because it's worse than that, I decided in doing the story on John Lennon to make an overlay of the career of Richard Allen, because he set up this meeting. And the one interesting fact about the decision of this controversial Allen story that is bringing the White House down and causing these cartoons in every paper and a mountain of articles. These are the dates that are of interest. On December the 7th, the people that Richard Allen had known for a long time called him and said, "We're coming to Washington." That was the initial contact. You can write that down, December the 7th. On December the 8th, they sent a two-page memo to make way for their interview with Ronald Reagan. It was a two-page memo on December the 8th, saying that two-paragraph memo to Ronald Reagan, and it went to Charles Tyson, who is now on the National Security Council. He was a staffer of Allen's, and the memo went to Ronald Reagan and in charge of Charles Tyson of the National Security Council. Now, what happened on December the 8th? The introduction or the opening came on the 7th. On December the 8th, they said, "We're coming to see Reagan." Well, in case you don't remember, December the 8th was the day that John Lennon was delivered and packaged before the inauguration, and Ronald Reagan didn't have to contend with his kind. He was dead and in his coffin he was cremated. But December the 8th was that day. Then they came to Washington, D.C. on the 18th. This party arrived on the 15th. And this isn't a party that just happened to want an interview. I'm going into the background of Allen and then into Mark David Chapman. He had known these people there's two controversial dates, one from 1970 and the other was from 1966 when they were both at the Hoover Institute in Palo Alto, California. Heavy in espionage, Defense Department work, counterintelligence, and so forth. They arrived in Washington January the 15th and they met January the 18th with Richard Allen. And at that time, Richard Allen received what is described as a big present. There was an article in the L.A. Times that this meeting over at the Blair House was a big present. And when the present is told, according to newspaper reports, then we will know the truth of the Richard Allen story. That was in the Los Angeles Times this week, November the 28th. It said, according to a wire service report from Tokyo, the newspaper said in a front-page story that the Allen investigation will enter the final stage when the American investigators find out what the big present was. The big present was given to Richard Allen January the 18th by Professor Tamatsu Takasi, the husband of one of the women who interviewed Mrs. Reagan. And that big present was delivered on the 18th. And then it was on the 19th that they went to see Ronald Reagan alone, not Nancy, and the 20th was the inauguration, and the 21st was the picture. According to an article in the Washington Post, the picture was just the day after the inauguration. They finally met with Mrs. Reagan. The representatives, according to Allen, finally met. Well, you can believe finally. They've been working on this December the 7th, the 8th, the 15th, the 18th, the 19th. Now, the 21st, they finally meet Mrs. Reagan. There was a confused 5 to 7 minute session on January the 21st. As the Reagans were walking downstairs to a reception, there were photos, there were three questions, and then the Japanese people left. An envelope was handed. One of the people, they don't know who it was, maybe Mrs. Takasi, thrust some papers in the hand of Allen, and he turned them over to somebody else. And that's the chronology. We don't know yet what the big present was. But a few days before the inauguration, Allen got his gift. Not talking about the watches and not talking about the check. This is something else. Now, before John Lennon was murdered, on December the 7th, that would happen to be a Sunday night. He was murdered Monday night. On tape number 470, the broadcast in general title was called, "Do We Learn from the Lessons of History?" And one of the things that I have on the printed sheet, if you don't have that tape or you want ordered, it was the night before Lennon was killed. This is what I had on the sheet that accompanies the tape that I had on KLRB. The assassination teams from the early 60s are all in their place. If not part of the murder, these men are all part of the cover-up. And I listed the people who, and I later said earlier, as a matter of fact, had said, were hard on the rock musicians and were part of the team that had killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Salvador Allende, Janis Joplin, Lenny Bruce, you name it, rock stars, rock musicians, and John Lennon. Lennon wasn't even dead till the next night. And these are the people I listed. And in the next few weeks, I'll continue to show their role in this particular affair. One was Ronald Reagan. The other was Ed Davis from the Los Angeles Police Department, who's now a senator in California. Arlen Specter of the Warren Commission, who's now a senator in Washington, who's pushing a judge for a U.S. judge in Philadelphia who is under a lot of questionable acceptance of large fees from lawyers who present cases in front of his court. Evel Younger, who always lauded, he attacked the rock musicians, and he and Ed Davis were part of a larger FBI, CIA operation in Los Angeles, and Younger was DA when Robert Kennedy was killed down there in Los Angeles. Reagan was governor, and Ed Davis was chief of police. I mentioned Paul Laxalt, and he plays an important part in this. John J. McCloy, that's the fellow who, the attorney for Jackie Onassis, the attorney whose office the young lawyer is setting up this counterintelligence operation in Washington. Richard Nixon, who goes right back to the Allen days. Gerald Ford, who's the Japanese government gave $1 million towards his library in Michigan. John Connolly, Richard Allen, I mentioned, the night before Lennon was murdered. Howard Baker, he's one who took the Japanese contingent to, Richard Allen took them to meet Howard Baker in Washington, D.C., and Tip O'Neill, who was very close to Tonsung Park and the Korea Gate operation. And I listed the agents from the CIA, the DIA, and National Security Agency, that's Richard Allen, and the same people that received the letter from Japan were coming to see Ronald Reagan. The night before John Lennon was murdered, I had listed those people who right now can fit into an overall picture of who killed John Lennon, and the next evening, Lennon was dead. There were articles this week in the newspaper that I'm sure pertain to Mr. Allen. They come from Japan. One says, Nissan chief rejects the cut in auto imports, or exports rather, that they said they have to maintain their quota. They will not cut the quota. They went there, the Japanese automakers, at a time when American cars are going bankrupt through their own fault, not through the Japanese fault. We make these big gas guzzlers. But there they are at Blair House before the inauguration, after the inauguration, meeting with Allen, meeting with Ronald Reagan, and these papers today say they reject the cuts in auto exports. They maintain they need the quota to the U.S., and they call this a matter of life or death, that would be impossible, we flatly reject. And I think one reason that the reports of the Allen case and the big money are coming from the Japanese police is that Allen and Reagan reneged on the pacification of the Japanese by probably telling them they could have what they wanted with the car imports. Another article this week, Japanese are deserving of more patience. This is Mike Mansfield, our ambassador to Tokyo, saying soften your approach to Japan. And what he really means is if we keep hitting them on producing more weapons and curtailing their cars or their computers, they will spill the beans, because a good share of the American counterintelligence, the SLA operations, the Nugent Hand operations, the Wells Fargo scandal is interwoven with the Japanese mafia and the Japanese relationships to our Central Intelligence Agency. We've used that country and those agents so strongly that if we turn down the products they're selling, we can counteract and leak stories as they are about Allen. And if we give in to them, then our own motor cars go bankrupt as they are doing, and then people will storm the White House and say what is happening. An article this week, General Motors layoff of 13,000 in Detroit. 13,000 people just this last week in Detroit, and all of the motor companies are having trouble. Now, the night before John Kennedy was assassinated, Richard Nixon, who plays a big part in the Richard Allen story, Richard Nixon was in Dallas, Texas, at the home of Mr. Murchison and Clint Murchison. They all had a role in the Kennedy assassination. J. Edgar Hoover was there. The Pepsi-Cola bosses were there that Richard Nixon worked with and Ronald Reagan worked with. And the Pepsi-Cola offices shared Warner Lambert in New York City. I talked about the Nazi Galen chief who worked with our Defense Department and set up our spy system in this country with money from around the world going down to South America. This Otto von Bolschwing came out of the offices of Elmer Bobst and Warner Lambert that co-officed the Pepsi-Cola people. And Richard Nixon was down with his clients as a lawyer, allegedly, in Dallas, Texas, the night before John Kennedy was assassinated. I've referred to that meeting many times. It was written up in Penn Jones' third volume of Forgive My Grief on page 84. The head man was in Dallas, and it tells about Richard Nixon and leaving the airport the morning that Kennedy was killed, November 22nd, 1963. And I think the November 21st, 1963 meeting of Richard Nixon and Clint Murchison and J. Edgar Hoover and the top people that were going to be behind the murder of John Kennedy, and the murder of John Kennedy, November 22nd, 1963, isn't much different than the approach to Richard Allen on December the 7th, opening up a conversation, "We want to come to you," and December the 8th, it's given to Ronald Reagan and the National Security Advisors. These are a treacherous gang, but they're a consistent gang, and you can pretty well almost guess their next moves. Now, on 1980, November the 2nd, 1980, this was about a month before John Lennon was killed, I had said on KLRB on that sheet that goes with the tape, the Reagan advisors are linked to Japanese auto industry, and this is about Richard Allen getting $100,000 a year from Datsun, and meeting with Robert Vesco, the international organized crime figure who headed up assassination teams. I was saying on KLRB a year ago and a month before Lennon was killed that not only did Richard Allen work for Japanese automotive companies, but he had other reasons for money or big gifts to be transacted besides the import quota on cars. And I mentioned that Richard Allen worked with the top organized crime and assassination teams. And I might add that Robert Vesco works with Frank Turple and George Carcole and Edwin Wilson and Theodore Shackley, the assassination teams that were formed after the Bay of Pigs that killed John Kennedy and then set up Air America in Australia and carried heroin and assassination business up through tomorrow. They're still working, as far as you can tell by the headlines. They're still maybe going to come in and take care of Reagan and blame Gaddafi. They're still at work. But I said a year ago and less 1 month that Richard Allen worked both for Datsun and Robert Vesco and the assassination teams. He also worked in 1972 as an agent for Portugal, covering up a massacre in Mozambique. And a third broadcast that I had on this station, on World Watchers, was November the 2nd, 1980, the other part of the story of Allen. And the subject was the rock musicians will have a hard time when the Ronald Reagan administration gets into office. And I referred to various people that had died, and I said that this is what I had on the sheet of the broadcast that particular week was about the rock star Paul Kantner, who had a stroke, the founder of the Jefferson Starship, who was about to make a new album. And I mentioned that there was going to be a new kind of inauguration party. I didn't know about Allen's guests and the meetings of Ronald Reagan at that time, that it was going to be set up by John Warner, Secretary of the Navy, that the arrangements for the inauguration. And John Warner is closely associated with Edwin Wilson, who heads the assassination teams. So I had the right names, and they've been moving around all year. But I knew they would be hard on the rock musicians, and Lennon died a month later after that broadcast. And I had the names of the people involved, like Richard Allen, the assassination teams, and John Warner, and that involves Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson and the co-partners in safe houses in Virginia. So a year ago, I was calling the shots before the gun went off, and on the second half of this broadcast this evening, I'm going to do a little more on Richard Allen, or quite a bit, before we get to Mark David Chapman, the fellow that killed John Lennon, and show you the interweaving of the two and how their agencies and agents crossed.